Here we go, Scotty. We are back for the fourth lap of the Sideways podcast. We made it one more time. We got to watch double the action this past weekend. You were up in New York City watching some tennis, but I'm glad to have you back. And yeah, how you doing, man?
Doing well. Yeah, the U.S. Open was a blast. So much fun to take that in again. This is 3 years in a row that we've been able to do that. In addition to that, had some World of Outlaws broadcasts over the weekend. So I actually didn't get to watch any of the racing until Monday and had quite an enjoyable Labor Day catching up on all the racing that you guys got to see there on the Springfield Mile.
I know. I had to be careful of what I was telling you. I didn't want to give you too many spoilers of what you were about to see, but it was pretty predictable. Jared Meese decided to make it less of a show than what Springfield Mile could have been, but yeah, we got to appreciate the greatness there, right? While we can see it at least for one more race for sure.
Absolutely. And, I guess I was kind of being like willfully ignorant and like believing that Jared wasn't going to go out there and just lay it down and try to put a stamp on the season with everything that Springfield means to him and to that team, and Indian Motorcycle, it being their last two rounds, their last time at Springfield. I should have known better and just accepted that Jared was going to show up and be ready to put it on him. That first main event where it looked like a full straightaway on the field at one point and just brought it home. It's like you said, it's really just, we need to appreciate the greatness that is Jared and this era that he has been in with the Indian Motorcycle dating back to 2017. So, a really special day for him. You know, if it's Jared's last year in Springfield, for him to close it out the way he did on the anniversary of his wedding, getting to take victory laps with Nicole and with his kid and with Kenny Tolbert as well, and Kenny being such a pivotal part of Jared's success on that bike. I mean, love Jared or hate Jared, you got to appreciate his accomplishments and respect what he's able to do. And the fact that he has Springfield and Lima and overcame weather at both of those events, he and his team still putting on these events for us at these historic facilities. It's kind of fitting to see, you know, Jared sort of end his time at Springfield. If this is it, for him to end it that way, it's really fitting for the King to kind of go out like he did there.
Yeah. There's so many points you just touched on that are critical there. One part, Kenny Tolbert getting to not only take the victory lap, but actually ride the motorcycle and drive it himself. That was really cool, really touching. It's just kind of like sending him off. In a way, you know, it wasn't the last race, but it was such a special event. And to be able to win two main events in one day by such dominating fashion is fulfilling for not only Jared and his family, but Kenny Tolbert. Because after I saw, when I was in the booth starting the day off in practice, and the night before I was actually talking to Ben Evans, Brandon Robinson's mechanic, and he was really, you know, really excited about what he was able to bring to the table the next day for Brandon. So I was like, okay, you know, Jared's obviously going to have something good. We always know that, but it's, you know, Brandon left something there at DeCoin, you know, something was missing there at DeCoin. So I expected come Sunday morning, Brandon was going to have a rocket. And although Brandon's bike, you know, was fast, when I saw what Jared did in practice, my jaw was on the floor, because it was one of those bikes where you don't even have to draft. It just, as soon as you get the thing on the meat of the tire, just straight up and down, Jared just took a left, blew right by him, and then could go right back in front of him. And it was like, at that point, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be a tough day for anybody to do anything with. Even like Dallas's Yamaha is fast, but that Indian was so fast the way it was accelerating off of that corner, just in practice, only one person drafted by him all day, and like truly drafted by him was Dallas. That was the only bike that could draft by him in qualifying in practice. So at that point, I knew Jared was going to be a tough cookie to break there. I was really hoping that we would have something a little bit more there, and I was hoping that Brandon was going to be able to keep this thing tight going into the final race. But Jared does what Jared's did now for the past 9 championships and potentially 10 coming up, and just he's showing us why he is, you know, in my opinion, the greatest of all time.
Yeah, what you touched on there with the ability that he had with that bike, it just felt like they were on another level all day, and that he could put that bike where he needed to. And it was almost like toying with his prey. Even though he didn't set the fastest lap in practice and qualifying, we had such a different track during that time than what they ended up racing with out there. You know, you had mentioned on the broadcast how fun it looked and how they were all over the place during practice. But as we went on throughout the day and it sort of became a groove on the bottom, and yeah, Jared just had the best machine all day. They adapted to the changes and just in just dominating fashion. Even though that second main event was closer when you're watching it, and Dallas got around him, I think, once or twice, it just never felt like anything was in doubt throughout that day. Just if Jared was going to get pined, he was going to get right back ahead and then be able to create enough of a gap to where he was going to be comfortable and not be susceptible to attack.
And I even had a thought, because they watered it. They did a good job trying to water it all day to give him the racing line. Like in practice, they were, you know, riding kind of all over the place. And then towards qualifying two, this single started to go down to the bottom and the times went faster, whereas the twins were up top in qualifying two and their times were about a second a lap slower. So that was the real shift in the day. And the track crew did a really good job at trying to keep moisture in to keep the racing line available. And before the first main event for the Super Twins, they watered up top a lot. And I, you know, turned to my buddy. I'm like, hey, there's a good chance Breyer's going to try to do something along the top, because he hasn't really had crazy momentum yet today. And first lap coming into one and two, he is up top. It unfortunately didn't work out. The groove just had too much grip on it and there was nothing there. But Breyer's always one to, you know, try to find something when it's out there. If there's anything out there, if there's not, he's still going to at least give it a shot.
Yeah, and he had to throw the kitchen sink at it throughout that day. Unfortunate afternoon for him with the issues with the clutch in the first main event. And then I don't remember, you can fill us in, maybe my memory is escaping me, with what happened in the second main event, but two DNFs for him on the day. Real devastating, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunate day for him. Wasn't able to repeat what he did last year, but it was tricky. The track was definitely a little bit different, and Jared's bike was just an animal.
Definitely was. One, you know, as impressive as his performance was, I mean, what else could you say about just the sheer guts and bravery of Dallas Daniels?
Well, first off, the biggest moment, I'm just glad that he was able to, you know, escape the big potential off that he had going into one there. The draft kind of sucked him in a little bit, and he actually got into the back of both Brandon Price and Brandon Robinson. And that would have been a nasty, nasty wreck, especially on the right side. You know, that would have been his right leg going down, and that was a scary one. But yeah, he did everything he could do all day for, and then that heat race win, the emotion he showed there was, it made him feel like, at times with Dallas, you know, he's so stoic and he's so all business. So to be able to see that kind of emotion come out of him was special for me. And a lot of the people around me, they even, you know, there was some people that commented and said, I really appreciated that out of Dallas. I appreciated him showing more of a human side rather than, you know, the all business, more only focusing on winning side. So that was cool. And I'm just glad he was able to come back and have a safe and successful weekend. And now he's got another, 13 days until the final race for him to heal up even more.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, just the pure emotion spilling out of him in that interview. And that definitely, it hit home because of how devastating that injury was for his season. I think we've said it several times that without that, he's probably the champion this year, you know, not to take anything away from anybody else, but he was having a superb season. He still has not finished off the podium, you know, to come back with that and to get two more podiums to keep that perfect record alive in Springfield. It's so impressive what Dallas has been able to do this year. And yeah, he may lose races, he may lose championships, but that dude has won our hearts and he's winning in life, because Dallas is, he's incredibly talented, incredibly inspirational, and just a super kind human being. And in addition to Dallas's, you know, I would call it success over the weekend, he's actually chopped in and has an outside shot at second in points now. You know, we weren't sure he was even going to show up or how he was going to be able to perform in Springfield. He was fourth coming in, and now he's kind of breathing down Brandon's neck in the standings there. So Brandon's going to need to put it all together there at Lake of the Ozarks. And if Dallas is able to pull out another, you know, superb ride and maybe even put that Yamaha on top of the box, not only would he win the manufacturer championship for Yamaha, he could also potentially steal second place in points on a season where he's, you know, missed three rounds.
Both of those points you just made would be amazing for not only Dallas, but the team. One, if Dallas can get second, that's an extra, you know, bonus check. That's quite a bit more money than he'll get for third. You get bonuses for top three in the championship, and then for the team to get the manufacturer's championship rather than giving it up to Indian for the last year that the Indian FTR is allowed to race, that would mean quite a bit to the team, especially with Dallas not being able to race at those three rounds.
Yeah, JD really helped keep him in that battle, and it's only 3 points between Indian and Yamaha going into that final round. So while Jared was able to really sort of take control, and it would take something catastrophic for anybody, for Brandon, who was the only one who mathematically could still take this championship from Jared. Brandon would have to win, and Jared would have to finish worse than 17th, or I guess make somebody mad and get DQ'd again. So it's not technically over, but it's going to be pretty difficult. And I think Jared's placed himself right where he needs to be. He doesn't have to go all out at Ozark if he's not feeling it on that day, but he's one win behind tying Chris Card for second all time. So I don't think Jared's going to try to take his foot off the gas. It's not like him to settle in and just, you know, bring it home.
It is an easier situation for Jared, having such a big points gap and having such a crazy scenario happen to happen. And I've been in the same thing where I think I needed to get like 2 points in Shayna. I would have had to get like 18th. And Shayna would have had to win the main event. So it's basically the same thing as Brandon and Jared. And it, albeit a bit stressful, it is kind of an easier situation to manage, especially if, you know, the other riders, say Brandon's not having the best day. Whereas, you know, coming to Lake Ozark, Brandon Robinson is going to be one of the guys to win the thing, along with Dallas, Breyer, Vanderkoy, Fisher. Any of these guys could really win. So Jared kind of has a clear path to the championship here, but anything can happen. Just like, you know, Dallas had such a big points lead, and anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And we've seen this season, anything will happen. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. I do want to give a huge kudos to Davis Fisher, who got his best wins result at Springfield. Now Davis does have a win at Charlotte in spectacular fashion, but his best Springfield result on the twin came there in that first race, in that runner-up spot, being sort of the best of the rest, with Jared, you know, checked off into the sunset, and Davis was able to hold off Dallas, who, like you said, recovered from that very scary moment going into one and two, and was able to rebound and charge back up to that third place finish. So props to Davis Fisher to put that bike on the box, that runner-up spot. Pretty important for weekend for him and his personal life as well. And then, you know, to back that up with another top five, Davis has put together some really strong results here lately. And it'll be cool to see what he can do to put a cap on the season. You know, his win at Charlotte was in a season finale on a clay car track. We head to Lake Ozark, which is a clay car track, and see what Davis can do and maybe continue some of this momentum that he was able to build up there.
Another big kudos out to Brandon Price and his team. They've shown another super strong finish on the miles this year. Wasn't able to quite get on the box this weekend, but they showed again how strong that Yamaha is and how strong Brandon is on the miles. He was fighting for the win. You know, he was fighting for the lead, and really great weekend. Was in some deep podium battles there with Dallas and Brandon and Breyer.
Yeah, Davis and Brandon Price and Jared Vanderkooy are only separated by 13 points in that sort of battle for fifth. Breyer's pretty much locked into fourth. I don't think, yeah, he's not going to catch Dallas. And nobody can mathematically catch him either. But Davis and Vanderkooy and Price are in a little bit of a tussle there for fifth there in the championship. And like you said, Brandon Price putting together two top fives on the weekend. Vanderkooy had a nice bounce back after DNF in main event one, comes home with a sixth. And speaking of bouncing back, I also got to give a huge shout out to Cam Smith, who didn't even make it out of his heat race in the first main event, was able to climb up to a 12th and then get a top 10 in the second main event there. And Bronson Bauman coming back from injury. Two top tens.
Yeah, Bronson had a strong run. Cameron, he was noticeable too, like in one of the main events. I can't remember which one it was, but I pointed him out and said, dang, Cameron's having a really good run. And then it was cool to see Bronson up inside of the top 10. He was in that second group, I believe it was, in the second main event there, and that was cool to watch. I think another interesting point is Brandon Price is right now right behind Dallas Daniels and Breyer Bauman on the production motorcycle engines. So Brandon's building up a huge notebook for next year, and he's got a big advantage already being able to have all of those specs going into next year, and he's building on a strong engine package moving forward. So that's something that we can talk about more this offseason, but I think that's really a slept-on fact of going into 2025.
That's a very good point that I had not even thought about. Yeah, Brandon has put together a really, really impressive year this year. You know, coming back to the series full time, and the only race he's missed has been Peoria. If he, you know, weren't for that, he might have even be closer to that fifth place finish. But yeah, very impressive rides for him and on that machine. Declan, again, on the miles, continues to impress. Two top tens for him as well. Breeders kind of got a handle on the rookie of the year as far as the points go, but Declan is currently sitting, you know, the rookies. We've got Trevor, who's eighth in points. Declan's ninth, and Max Whale is 10th. And Max has missed three rounds. Declan's had to miss a round. Trevor's had to miss a round. Very, very impressive performances by all three of these guys and on different machines. You know, Bringer started on the KTM before transferring to the Indian here in the back half of the year. Declan's been on the Indian throughout the year and has put together a stellar summer. Ever since DuQuoin, he's never been outside the top 10 in all the races that he's competed in, which is fantastic for Declan. And then Max, again, on the Harley, he's put together, you know, four top 10s in his last five starts, with that 11th in Black Hills being the only outlier there. So shouts out to all three of these rookies who, again, just getting those laps. And then Max being on the XG, he talked about building a notebook for next year.
Once Declan was able to get that sixth place finish into coin, that must have given him so much confidence that he can do it and he can run up front. This weekend at Springfield, he did deal with a lot of head shake, which I think kind of hurt his results, even though seventh and eighth still really respectable. You could see he wasn't comfortable quite going on the straightaways. The bike was kind of squirming around underneath him, which Declan's not, you know, big. He doesn't have a big big build. So for him to have that Indian squirming around underneath him, I'm sure I was making him a little bit nervous. Max Whale starting to build that notebook for next year. Not sure if he's going to stay on the XG for next year, but it's just one of those things that I think it was a smart move to be on the production-based bike going into next year. Just start learning, at least preparing. And, you know, we talked about it earlier where it's cool for those guys to be getting experience on the Indian, but to have to go from the best bike ever to a production engine, it's just, I've done it. It's tough. It's a lot easier and a lot more fun to ride those Indian FTR 750s than it can be to ride the production bikes.
Well, we've kind of touched on just about everything I have for the Twins Racing. You know, we had some impressive performances, but overall, it was kind of eh. Like, I hate to say that about the Springfield Mile, but the Twins Racing, like, Jared dominated it. There was some kind of good racing going on through the field, but everybody got really spread out. It almost felt more like the kind of racing that you see on some of these, like, R-track half miles. It was just on a bigger track. It seems like long gone are the days of the pack Twins racing on some of these miles that we, you know, grew to love for the longest time. And hopefully that epic battle from 2019 isn't a forever outlier. We can get back to more of that like you see in the singles class, but I just don't know that we're going to ever be able to restore that 5, 6, 7 rider pack in the Twins class, at least not in the immediate future. We'll see what happens with the new rules next year.
Yeah, kind of like back when there was, you know, 10 XR 750s all in that lead pack, just dicing it up, and you actually truly didn't know who was going to win. And like at Springfield when I was an amateur, and that was the scenario, come in off of turn four there on the last lap, you know, everyone in the grandstands would stand up because you truly didn't know who was going to win and you need to be able to see it. Whereas this year, it's like Jared's a whole corner ahead of the rest of the field. So it's like, yeah, but hats off to Jared Meese. And another thing that might be a little slept on is him to be able to just keep his composure throughout that day. You know, so much money on the line promoting that event and so many different things. And Nicole's able to handle so much of that. But that about wraps up the Twins there for both main events on the Springfield Mile. But now it's time to get on our first guest of the night, the Springfield Mile runner-up in both AFT singles main events, number 88 on the JPG Honda built by Brian Bigelow. We got Chase Sadoff. Chase, what is the frustration level calmed down from Sunday? I just can't imagine how it's got to be tough because you not only did it in one main event coming up that short, but in two. So how are you feeling?
Yeah, I was a little frustrated after the fact, but I've definitely calmed down since then. I mean, I feel like I did everything in my power to put myself in the right position in both races. So I wasn't too frustrated, just brush it off and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, like, just on a lower sense of frustration, just because, like you said, you did everything right. It just kind of comes down to, you know, bike versus bike and body versus body at that point. In my opinion, it just, you guys were so equal and you did such a good job strategy wise racing all day. So
Chase, it's been really impressive to just watch you as a rider this year. You've been in attack mode and been a really good counterpuncher this year. I was curious what's sort of contributed to what, or what's inspired you more into having that riding style to just be in attack mode at all times.
I would say the biggest thing would be Brian, for sure. Like, working with him is probably the greatest thing like I've ever done, you know, when it comes to being on the Hondas, anything like that. Brian, overall, like, as a rider, coach, mechanic, anything like that, like, he's top-notch, you know what I mean? We go out to one of my sponsors' house. His name's, we call him Welder Bob, and we ride at his short track, and that's where I've actually learned the most this year, I think, is out there just riding and just kind of getting comfortable on these Hondas. It took me a while to get used to them, and now that I'm starting to kind of get used to them, you know, which I should be now after 3 years, it's definitely helped out. And Brian being such a good mechanic and having such a hard work ethic helps out, and it pushes me to be more aggressive.
Just how does this year compare to the past couple years for you in this class?
This season, definitely, like, I feel like after it's all said and done, me and Brian should both be able to give ourselves a pat on the back, because it was definitely it was a very good season. We definitely had some ups and downs. I'm happy I got the monkey off my back for the getting my first win, and I don't know, I think we're both just kind of looking forward to next year. We're hoping that we can put together our program again, and yeah.
Did so you got the win at Texas, but you really got the win at DeCoin. Which one did you kind of have the same, you know, same feelings as the way I just said it, whereas like you were going to win the main event there in Texas before the rain came down, but you didn't get to cross the checkered, you didn't get the experience of giving, you know, Brian or your dad or somebody the victory lap and carrying the checkered and spraying the champagne as where you did in DeCoin? Is that kind of how you felt about that?
For sure, yeah. Texas, yeah, even though I technically won, it just didn't really feel like a win. And I wasn't satisfied until DeCoin, obviously. And after that one, yeah, it was great to get my first win. But like, after it was all said and done, like 15 minutes later, I was ready for the next round. Like, I was like, hey, can we start racing again? You know,
you talk about like in that mindset being ready for the next round in 10 or 15 minutes. Well, that's kind of what you guys had to deal with on Sunday, because the next round came immediately. Like, what was that like for you as a rider? Like, how do you shift sort of your mindset and put main event one out of the way and refocus onto a whole new program all in the same day? It seemed like you mentioned it after your heat race interview, you were kind of over the day. Sort of what was going through your mind? What was that thought process and that whole transition?
Yeah, the track was a little different this year compared to usual Springfield years. So when I said I was kind of over the day, I was really over the track because it was very one lined, and as soon as you slipped off the groove, you were just in no man's land. But to kind of prepare myself for the second day, I guess you could say, I just kind of had to ride around on the ground for a little bit and do some watching and like kind of just forget about the first main event, and then come back and just pretend basically that it was a new day. Physically, on a mile, you know, miles don't take a whole lot of energy physically. So, like, physically, I was fine, but mentally, trying to reset my mind was a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I would say that, like you said, it's not too hard, especially on a single on the mile. It's pretty much. Are you guys wide open all the way around?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. So, like, You did. I thought about it for quite a while, and I don't think there's really anything you could have done differently to try to win. There's really no strategy out there that I couldn't wrap my head around that would have worked well against Tom in that situation. You played your cards perfectly, in my opinion. Is there anything now that you've had a few days to decompress, you know, without having to go into details of future strategy, but have you and Brian really talked or figured out a way of how you guys think you could have won that race?
To be honest, not really. We talked on the phone a couple times, and for me, I could not get past Tom at the line, like, for the life of me, or before or even hardly after the line. Like, if I was drafting him going into turn one, it was like into turn one. So we talked about it, and like my biggest hope was that he would just make a mistake or slip wide or something like that, and I would be able to kind of just sneak away for a brief second right at the last minute.
Yeah, every time you went by him, you were having to run it in so deep, and the really only way I think something would have happened there, because he was riding, you know, just as good as you were that day. I just think that between body and machine, he was able to just have a little bit more speed. And Springfield, the way that track was that day, it was definitely a showcase of how fast your bike was, along with your body weight and size, because obviously you're a little bit bigger than he is. But I think without having Chad or Cody in there to disrupt it, and Chad did disrupt it a little bit, but not enough, because Chad ended up slipping up a little bit. And I think you honestly would have probably needed both of them to somehow get in between you two to be able to seal the deal. His bike was the class of the field that day.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Chase, you've managed to get your first one on the half mile. You got a mile win at DeCoin. You got the TT win at Peoria. You're coming into Lake Ozark just 2 points behind Tom for second in the championship. You could accomplish the single slam all in one season if you get this win on the short track. Now, Lake Ozark's a bigger short track, but it's still classified as a short track. You know, what would that mean to you to put a cap on a season that way?
That would be pretty awesome. You know, moving forward to next season, I would like to end the current season on a pretty high note, just so, you know, going to the off season, you know, I almost kind of have like a, I wouldn't say like a big head in a sense, but like kind of, you know what I mean? Like I'm still happy from last season, so carry that over. But getting the Grand Slam would be pretty cool, especially in one season.
Ideally for next season, I mean, it sounds like you guys seem like you want to stay on a 450. Is that sort of the hopes, or would you entertain the option of moving up to a twin next year?
Definitely I hope to stay on a 450, considering what's going on with the whole Indian thing. I really don't want to make the jump as of right now either, because I also would like to you know, try to secure a championship. So I think Brian and I are going to try to go at it for another year.
Yeah, no, you definitely need to get a singles championship. And if you're able to make money in that class still, and you're so competitive, and just an accolade to have is, you know, it's bad to the bone to have a championship bike sitting in your house. Hopefully one day you can win a championship and you can work a deal out with Brian to be able to have one of those in your house. It's special to me every time I've been able to look at mine, and you know, I know Dallas has some of his, and I think Cody has some of his. So I think next year it's teeing up to be a really good year between you and Tom on the singles. It is kind of, like you said, a one up. It just helps you go into the off season, you know, whoever wins this final race, whether it be you, Tom, or Cody, if you were able to win it, just gives you something, a little extra motivation all winter, to know that, you know, you're only as good as your last race. And if you're the guy that won going in Daytona next year, just, you're the guy to beat.
Chase, you've been able to kind of partake in several outlaw races throughout the year as well, and not just being strictly on the AFT circuit. Being in Illinois and sort of in the central of where a lot of these racetracks are, what are some tracks that you've competed on that you'd like to see maybe a national at one day?
I'm trying to think of what races I've done this season.
Springfield TT, man, that's what we want back, right?
Yeah, 100%. Springfield TT. I've had some ups and downs there, but that track, you can't hardly beat that track. That's about all I can think of, though. I don't know.
Anywhere that Chase goes, he has a good time at. So yeah. Chase, looking back on the year now, what has been your favorite race to date this year? I guess it, you know, is it DeCoin where you're able to get your first win, or is there somewhere you had an incredible battle at? Or just kind of looking back now, what do you think was your most memorable or most fun moment?
I would say my most memorable and fun, like my favorite track this year that to race was Peoria. Just because I've raced Peoria since I was I don't even know, 9 years old. That was my first time there on a 65, like watching the pros, riding on, like, you know, technically with the pros, but like not with the pros because we did our little exhibition race. But that one, just to win that one was crazy, especially after, you know, a red flag and then coming, you know, from second, passing Cody. And it was just a crazy, crazy race for me. Super fun, though.
A special race to win for sure, just especially because I've seen how good of a motocross rider Cody Kopp is. I've never had the privilege of riding motocross with you, but I see how fast Cody is. And for you to be able to come out and be able to win at Peoria TT, especially in your home state in front of a home crowd, which is something special too that I've seen, is the amount of Chase Sadoff shirts that you see around the pits and the support that you have, the fan base that you're growing, is something really cool. How, like, when you see all the fans at the track and how big your family is, so influential with helping grow your fan base, that must be feeling really good, huh?
Yeah, for sure. My mom does such an awesome job selling merch, and I can't thank my parents enough, you know, obviously for getting me to where I'm at today and doing still what they do for me today. They do so much. It definitely doesn't go unnoticed by me or Brian or anybody else on the team. And yeah, really, it just hypes me up when I'm out there walking on the line when we're doing our rider intros or anything like that, and I just see a bunch of people in Chase shirts, and you know, to hear the crowd kind of go crazy when they say my name is kind of cool. But you know, I'm just a small town kid, and to have something like that is pretty special.
How come? So I saw today that I think because you and Terrence and Tara, you're staying together right now, right?
Yeah, he's actually skydiving today.
Right, that's what I was going to bring up. I saw that you guys were together in a field earlier. Are you working on your track?
I'm currently in the process of building a moto track. My dad owns a 10-acre field in Coffeen, Illinois, which is about 6 miles outside of where I'm originated, which is Hillsboro. And there's a guy in town who does excavating who's coming out, or he's actually in the process of building it at the moment.
Oh, that's sweet. That's going to be so good to have it so close to your house. So did you use that you had to get on the podcast with us tonight as an excuse to get out of jumping out of a perfectly fine running airplane?
I did not. I actually just told Taryn that I'm not going through a midlife crisis, so I'll wait later on in life to jump out of a plane.
Was it even a thought through your head? Like, was there even a second where you're like, maybe I will do it?
No.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. There's no way I'm jumping out of an airplane.
You mean, I'll wait till I'm, like, I don't even know, whenever I have a midlife crisis, I guess.
I don't know what more of a rush you could need after what you went through on Sunday, you know, getting to race the Springfield Mile for 30 minutes all total throughout the day.
Yeah, that is, there's definitely not a whole lot more to ask for than that.
Has Taryn been able to talk you into doing anything crazy or stupid this season? I mean, what's it been like sort of like staying with him, traveling with him, training with him?
I'd say the only thing that they really talked me into is we were in South Dakota and we did some like downhill slide. It's called like a luge. And that was about the only thing. They all crashed. I was the only one. I was playing it safe. I was like, I got a race in a couple days. I'll go easy. But yeah, he's pretty cool to have around, you know. We fight like we're brothers, and people, you know, if you didn't know us, you probably think that we hate each other, but, he's definitely good to have around me, and we kind of feed off each other, and it's fun.
It was great to see this year how Taryn's been succeeding as of late. And one thing that I just thought of, so in the first main event there, you had two red flags throughout the race. Are you pretty cool through those, pretty calm, or do you get worked up at all? Or, you know, like there's been times in my past where when I'm leading or something, a red flag comes out and I kind of get like shake my head like, oh man, come on, why do we need this right now? How do you feel through those situations?
Red flags really don't bother me. I usually, if I'm leading, I'm a little, you know, little upset, but Brian always usually does a pretty good job calming down, which, it's funny if you ask Brian, like, you know, what'd you tell Chase before that main event? Like, you know, was there any plan there going in that main event? He's like, if I try to tell Chase anything, you know, he usually gets mad at me. which isn't true. And but no, yeah, that they really don't bother me.
That's good to hear. I always kind of got not worked up, but it just was like, man, come on. We had things rolling there, but it's on the Springfield Mile. I guess it really doesn't matter. It was interesting because this Sunday it really was you four, and you never had a pack. Like last year, there was, I believe, eight or nine of you one day crossing the line within a tenth of a second, where this year it was just you, Tom, Chad, and Cody. Did that make it easier for you? Did you ever even go back to fourth, or were you always in first or second?
I think I dropped back to third for maybe half a corner or a lap or something like that, just for the split second, kind of take a break, see if Chad was going to do anything with Tom. And then, yeah, but it definitely makes life a lot easier when you're not like fighting for your spot the whole time. Like me and Tom were basically just kind of just, I don't even know, passing each other back and forth until we saw the white flag.
Yeah, you and Tom had the bikes where you kind of controlled the race, whereas Chad and Cody kind of had to let the race come to them in a way. Like one time I had a bike similar to Tom's where it was just as soon as you're off the corner, you just go to the left and pass whoever's in front of you and you're back to the lead. So you and Tom had bikes similar to that where it is nice where you can always stay in first or second. Just unfortunately nothing you were able to figure out to the line there. I'm just yeah, I've been watching your career for a long time. I remember you, like you said, when you were nine at Peoria TT, and I remember, you know, you pushed my bike out one time, and I think it was Alabama or Tennessee, and you were so young then, and it's so cool to be able to see where you've taken your career now, and, you know, you're on the cusp of, you're winning singles races all the time, and you're on the cusp of winning a championship, and, you know, potentially a few in the future, and it's really cool to see all the way that you've come, and you've still got so much in front of you. Have you had any time yet to hop on a twin? Have you ridden one at all ever yet?
I haven't even really stepped foot on a twin.
I guess that keeps it simple there. Just keep focusing on what you're doing with the single. Try to win some championships. You know, I've won one. Dallas has won two. Cody's won three. Maybe Chase Sadoff's going to be the guy that wins four. That's a lot of years in the singles class.
Yeah, for sure. What made you guys start the pod? What's up with it?
Okay, now we're getting interviewed. Just wanted some more media in the sport, and I enjoy talking now that I'm retired in a way, and I haven't gotten, you know, the ability to be a commentator like I'm hoping one day comes. I'd love to be in the booth there announcing the races like I get to do sometimes in practice and qualifying. I just like to be able to talk to, you know, my old competitors, but now just my friends. And it's cool to get the backstory, and I know that the fans, since we've started this a few weeks ago, I've had so many fans reach out, text me, call me, or comment, or even talk to me this past weekend at Springfield and say, you know, it makes their drive to work easier. And it, even though it might be simple to you and I, like we've talked about a lot of this stuff in the past, these fans have never heard this. Like, you know, just hearing you talk about skydiving for a second, or just, you know, going on a luge, it's just neat for the fans, and they really appreciate it. And it was easy to have like a co-host like Scotty, who always backs me up and so knowledgeable, whereas my memory's kind of gone. His memory's really, really good. And yeah, just something we're passionate about, right, Scotty?
Yeah, I don't know if my memory's that great. It's going the older I get. But yeah, just to kind of echo Colby's sentiments, you know, just to have another outlet for people to hear about flat track racing. And, you know, I'm just a fan. So having Colby here, there's so much that I can learn from this. And also, it's just so cool to be able to chat with you guys, you know, in away from the racetrack. I've been kind of hesitant to sort of like go up to riders in the pits in the past, because on race day, you know, you guys are there to do a job. And I don't really want to interfere with that. And not that I necessarily would be. But yeah, it's just cool to get to hear these stories and get to know more about the riders in the sport, and to have somebody like Colby to invite me on to do this is really special, because I'm so appreciative of his knowledge of the sport, his experience, and just what he brings to flat track racing.
It's definitely pretty cool that you guys are doing it. I definitely, when I'm driving down the road, I like to listen to podcasts, so it helps me out too.
Yeah, hopefully. Absolutely.
Into the rotation.
Yeah. Hopefully the Sideways podcast fits into the rotation for you. Chase, I just want to thank you again. so much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it. I know the fans would love to hear from you. You have such a big fan base growing in American flat track and throughout Illinois. Me and Scotty, we were kind of hoping you'd be able to do the Illinois Slam this year and win all five, but to be able to win, or all four, excuse me, but to be able to win the Peoria TT, I think that, you know, that's, to me, that would be a little bit more special. That's a cool event to win. There's so much nostalgia there, but thanks again for coming on, and we'll get you on again this winter sometime to hear about how your winter training's going.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it, Chase. Take care, man.
You too.
All right, so that was Chase Sadoff, currently sitting third in the AFC singles points, putting together easily his best year of his career. We talked about it going into our Springfield preview, having an average finish of second on the season. He picks up two more runner-up spots. He's right there, just 2 points behind Tom Drain. And just super cool to have such a talented rider and really, like you said, he's got such a budding fan base growing in this sport. And is one of those personalities and those riders that we need that is going to help, I think, grow this and help continue to make flat track so amazing in the future.
Those first three riders, Cody, Tom, and Chase's finishes, if you look at them in the results standing on the AFT page, is just ones, twos, threes, and fours pretty much. It's without the big three, it would be easily championships would have been wrapped up races ago. But it's pretty cool to see the consistency there between those three guys, and just they're right now the class of the field, those three. But great to have Chase on and get a little more insight and just kind of hear what he had to think about the weekend. It had to be frustrating, you know, when you're on a mile like that and you're doing everything you can do and it just comes down to machine at the end of the day, it gets to you. And I think Brandon Robinson's probably feeling that way right now, whereas he's an amazing mile rider, but they gave it everything they had that day, and that's just the way it worked out. But let's get a rundown through the rest of the field. Trent Lowe continued his mile struggles a little bit in the first main event. You know, he ended up pulling off early with a DNF there. I'm not sure exactly what the issue was, but he was able to rebound with either a backup bike or they fixed the issue in the same bike, and he got a fifth in the second main event.
Yeah, finally able to end his drought of not being in the top five in that second main event. But just once again, it feels like that Turner team is just cursed. Like they cannot get things to go their way for an entire weekend, because even when Trent was able to rebound in the second main event, well, then Renshaw has a DNF. So it's just like they just can't get a full day to work in their favor. Just tough, because I thought Trent was going to factor into this. And in that second main event, he was toward the front for the majority of that race, just didn't get to play a factor in the final outcome.
What did you think on the first lap of the first main event with Renshaw and Travis Penton? That was awful to watch from the grandstand. So scary, and I cannot believe he was able to. You know, at 15 minutes later, I saw him limping back to his pits, and I was like, "Oh my goodness, we are so lucky for that." It just when I watched it back, it just looked like there was nowhere to go. It looked like Renshaw had probably two or three guys in front of him, so he kind of just rolled out of it a little bit, which that's a typical mile move. You know, you don't want to go into the first corner, the third corner on the first lap, 5-6 wide. So Evan just kind of started, you know, settling into where he was, and it looked like the draft sucked Travis in, and he wasn't quite prepared for Evan to do that, and he tried to pull out as quick as he could, because you can't just get on the brakes and stop. The air will suck you in. So
yeah, I guess, I mean, you kind of explained like what I was going to ask about that is that feeling and what that's like with the draft and how that plays a role. And I don't think anybody did anything wrong there. It's definitely a scary situation. Very thankful to see Travis able to get up and be okay from that, because it could have been so much worse just to have that happen in the pack. And I guess when you talk about getting like sucked in like he did and falling over the bars like that, you know, Dallas is really lucky that didn't happen to him. We touched on that a little bit. Is that sort of like how you feel both incidents, you know, like played out? Is that sort of what happened to Dallas going into 1 and 2 in the twins class? Same thing happened to Travis going down the backstretch in the singles class.
Same feeling, very different scenarios. The feeling of getting sucked in going into a corner is something that, you know, we put a lot of thought into while we're going on the straightaway and where we need to position ourselves and when we start rolling out of it to know that we're going to have room there. In Dallas, just ran out of room. There was nowhere to go below Brandon, and it sucked him in, and he's got so much talent to be able to save that, not only once off of Price, but also off of Robinson. And Travis, it just, there was just a lot of commotion going on there on lap one. And like you said, there was nothing anyone did wrong. It's just that there was nowhere to go. You know, it was highway traffic at 5 o'clock. Everyone was getting out of work and there was nowhere for anyone to go. So Evan just kind of started rolling out of it a little bit and looks like, because he couldn't, I mean, there's no reason to go five wide down the back straightaway on lap one. That's not going to do anything but put everyone in danger. So Travis just kind of got sucked in and he tried to go left and he just ended up going over the top of Evan's tire. And really lucky that Evan was able to just ride out of it, and lucky that everyone behind was able to ride out of it too.
For sure. Very, very scary moment there. We had another incident later in that first main event with Aiden Rusevans and Michael Enderbitson going into 1-2 that brought out a red flag with just two laps to go. And really kind of, I think it changed the fortunes of a few riders in that main event to sort of bring the pack sort of back together and really shuffle things up there. You end up seeing Ian Wolf, who gets his first top 10. And the thing that was we had great stuff happen, great storylines, great racing job in the singles class. The thing I was most hyped about throughout the whole weekend was seeing Shayna get a top 5 in that first main event. And yeah, I'm a Shayna Texter fanboy. Corey's one of my guys, so I'm going to be biased here. Sorry. I love seeing Shayna get a top 5 there. And her and Hunter Bauer were working really well together and caught up to that sort of second group before that red flag. They were able to chase down, I believe, with Santero and Renshaw. And I can't remember who else was in that group in the first main event, but they worked together and were catching that group, got up in the mix, red flag comes out, and then Shayna and Bauer are able to pull off a 5th and 6th in that first main event. And I was so stoked to see them back up in the top 5 there with that bike and to be underpowered as well.
Me and my girlfriend, we were rooting for Shayna because it's cool to see for two reasons for me. One, she's not finishing nearly where her skill level is. You know, they've said it a few times where she's kind of put her career on the back burner to try to get Breyer to where his natural ability and talent should put him. And I know how good Shayna is, especially on these miles. I've duked it out with her many times, and she's just as good as any of these guys out there. She's just as good as Tom and Chase and Cody. It's just, it's been tough for her lately. And in when I was on the singles class, so for her to be able to battle still at the front, just, you know, it, I don't know, it just relit something inside of me. It was just cool to see, and it just gave me an extra reason to pull for her, especially on that day.
Yeah, and we talked with Jared Mees being one of the greatest of all time, and when he steps away, there's going to be a hole that I don't think any of us really know how we're going to feel about. And I think Shayna gets just as much taken for granted when she's finally decided that she wants to step away from flat track racing. There's going to be a real void there. I think people underappreciate how much she means to the sport, how inspirational she is, and just her accomplishments as a whole. They see the struggles that team's having, and they forget, like you said, the battles that you two had during your championship season and some of the stuff that she was able to do, like her ride at Sacramento, and I want to say it's 2019, where she went from 5th to 1st on the final lap. Like, that is going to be forever burned in my mind. It was so cool to see them get back-to-back top 10s on the weekend there, on that day there. We talked about Ian Wolf getting his first top 10. Reese Poddorf in that second main event, he comes home 10th, gets his first top 10. And that's cool because Reese was one of the riders who got screwed there in DuCoin with that whole ordeal. So to see him be able to be in both main events and to capitalize on that second main event, get a top 10. Also, Tyler Raggio was up in the mix early on. And Tyler has a really fun style. I love watching Tyler ride a motorcycle. There's just something picturesque about the way he rides a bike.
Oh, another one I just thought of too is Aiden Brown. Those hole shots he was pulling were really impressive. He either led a lap or he just got nipped at the stripe. But I mean, from the second row, he was able to be leading off at 2, and that was really cool to see for him.
Yeah, Aiden was always up in the mix there early on. He was fighting for the lead and he races and getting good starts there. Seemed to sort of like shift back later in the action, but still cool to see him up there and fighting with those riders and getting direct transfers on, I believe, the second main event. He got a direct transfer out of his heat race there.
And Chase touched upon in his interview about how the track was just kind of weird this year. And Jared Lowe actually kind of got an example of that. He missed the groove a little bit going into 3 there, and he ended up just sliding out. just a really weird crash. No fault of his own, just, you know, going into a, it's kind of like on Sacramento Mile, when you go off the groove there, it just gets real icy and slippery and dusty, and you just got nothing you can hold on to. And Jared Lowe, unfortunately, had to deal with that earlier in the day, but no harm, no foul, didn't get hurt or mess the bike up, and was able to come back for both main events later that day.
That's about all that I have as far as the singles class goes. I did, you mentioned about the track being different, and Chase touched on it being different. I kind of like to talk a little bit about that and what you saw, because it feels like, now, we had two full programs, so of course it's going to go through a lot of changes. But is this the most you've seen Springfield change from start to finish in a single day?
It stinks because when you have a two-day event, you have two different Springfield miles. You know, on the first day, you could have a track where you're on the rail like they were that day, and then the next day you could have one where you're up in the middle of the track or even up by the air fence. So to have both of them on the same day, you're pretty much forced to race the second main event wherever the first one was. And as soon as we got up, the sun was baking. You know, Saturday after the rain stopped, it was baking pretty much all afternoon. And then all day Sunday, the track was just baking. And the track workers did a phenomenal job keeping, you know, the water going down on it. They have such good equipment there at the state fairgrounds. So that was good. But I don't know. It as soon as they got going, it just kind of seemed like from qualifying two on, as soon as those 450s went to the bottom, you just knew that everyone was going to be around the ring. And it did have that weird spot through four there where that dust kept popping up every lap. And I don't know exactly where that came from. Just sometimes those weird anomalies happen like that, whether it be just it didn't get the rain in that spot, didn't run down there, or just the way the dirt is, the composition of the exact dirt there is different. But that was kind of tricky. We should have asked Chase how he went over that. But yeah, just, you know, it bums me out a little bit not having two different days, but what are you going to do? You know, they did an amazing job getting both events in one day. In my opinion, it was kind of long for me, at least in the grandstands. I think it may have been different if we had more of a nail biter of a finish, but with Jared Meese just being so dominant and then the rest of the field pretty much just being the same, you know, it kind of was a little bit.
Well, it definitely is it's a cool place to be at. I'm so thankful that I got to experience that last year and get the doubleheader with it on the Saturday and Sunday. And just hats off to Jared, because he has made Springfield, and it may have always been this way, but for me, Springfield feels truly like an event, not just a motorcycle race, with how much they have going on in, I guess, your midway or outside the grandstands, all the vendors that are set up, everything that's going on there. I'm really blown away with what Jared and his team and Nicole and all of them are able to do with that event. How it doesn't feel like it's just a motorcycle race. There are some times when I go to AFT events where it just feels like I'm at a racetrack, and the vibe doesn't feel much different than when I'm going to a local amateur race, and that's just how I feel personally. But what Jared does is I feel like he really does elevate his events and gives you more bang for your buck when you're there. So I want to give a huge kudos to him and being able to do that when I was there last year, and then seeing some of the shots and hearing about all the stuff they had going on in the grounds. It was cool to hear some of that promoted.
And that's what we need. You know, Jared needs to be able to turn it into an event rather than just a motorcycle race. We need to have a motorcycle race at an event to bring in younger fans, because that's one thing that I noticed at the race this weekend that was kind of, it's not a bummer, but it's a very serious problem that needs to be dealt with. The median age there at the fairgrounds in that grandstands of the mile, I mean, had to be 40 some years old, 40 or 50 years old. The amount of kids there my age is maybe less than 100, maybe 150 kids, you know, sub 25, sub 30. So that's something that we need to keep racking our brains to figure out how to fill those grandstands with more of that supercross age demographic. Jared does a good job trying to bring in, you know, make an event. And like you said, he did a really good job. There was a lot to do. There was a lot of different food vendors. One of my sponsors, the Country Saloon from here in East Peoria, Illinois, they set up like a cool little bar area to have drinks outside. And Jared does a good job there. Nicole, you know, they both work extremely hard. And it'll be interesting to see next year, now that Jared is probably retired, how they can elevate it even more with not just having Nicole's mind to it, but Jared's mind to it full time as well. And yeah, it'll be cool to see that aspect. But we need to have these events bringing in younger demographics to be able to support the sport moving forward.
Yeah, there needs to be a future for that. We need the stands to fill up and to that have more youth involved in it. And I do think there are some riders who do a decent job of that. I mean, it's you've got to make it exciting for our short attention spans. If we can't sell something in 10 seconds these days, people lose track of that. And I think that's where a lot of people harp on, you know, riders needing to do more on social media. And there are some who have done a good job with that. I was always impressed with what Dalton has been able to do. And I think his sort of presence on social media does a really good job. What he and Lane were always able to do, I think, was really reaching a broader demographic there. And I hope we get sort of more of that in flat track and can grow this. Because if you can just get people to the races, they're gonna want to come back. It's the most exciting form of motorsports in America.
Yeah, and there's so much you can do. It just, you know, you got to put yourself out there and, you know, take the time to do it. Like, I've done some stuff before with TikTok and trying to make like day in the life videos, and it's neat. And, you know, the one time I did it, I was able to get a pretty decent size reach for just making a video by myself in one afternoon. So you just got to be willing to put yourself out there and actually work at it. And yeah, I mean, the amount of money you can make on social media, we can talk about that in another podcast. There's so much there's so much for riders to be able to dive into there, that it's an untapped market. But yeah, Scotty, I appreciate it as always. I think we covered a lot of bases there. Springfield Mile, there was, you know, not a crazy amount of highlights. It was another great flat track race. There was no like craziness, in my opinion. I think you agree with that as well. But it was cool to get Chase Sadoff on. He's, you know, the next redhead taking my spot, taking over. And he's
the ripening tomato. Okay.
Yep, exactly. So thank you so much, Scotty, and I look forward to doing this next week. We have an off weekend this weekend. It's got Super Motocross in Charlotte. Are you going, actually?
I'm not going to make it this year. I was able to make it last year, but I'm going to have to sit this one out. Probably watch it from home, but I will be tied up with World of Outlaws commitments this weekend, so won't be able to make it to Super Motocross this year. Now, had somehow we had a finale across the street at the dirt track, maybe my plans would have changed, but I think I'm going to set Supercross out this year and just focus on our World of Outlaws commitments.
I forgot about that. We were supposed to end there this Saturday night in Charlotte.
Okay.
And how did we end up? Now we're in middle America.
I'm going to put you on the spot with this, because I just heard rumbling. What? You were a rider at the time this all was happening. This was before you retired. What were you hearing as a rider about the Charlotte idea? And Lake Ozark, I think, is going to be an interesting track. It's going to be very unique. It's going to be brand new. I think it could race pretty well for this series, so I'm not knocking that. I'm just biased because Charlotte's 10 minutes from me. But what were you hearing whenever this was sort of becoming, or whenever the finale was coming into clarity?
It was a done deal. I thought, like, there was no doubt in my mind we were, you know, I was actually thinking about, I was talking to people about, like, how many people are going to come from the Super Motocross, because I believe that's a day race, over to the flat track at night. And I was like, yeah, it'll probably help out. It'll probably draw some people over, you know, you get a double header. And I was totally convinced that was the scenario. So then when they said Lake of the Ozarks and we're not going to Charlotte at all, I was like, oof, I didn't see that coming. So yeah, it was a total, you know, side shot. But I think that's one part where us riders have been frustrated this year, is the communication between the sanctioning body and us. We just don't have a ton of communication. And like, we should have known where the season finale was last September. Us as riders, there's no reason in 2 weeks at the finale that we shouldn't know every round for next year, so we can start, you know, booking hotels, or at least pitching to sponsors the amount of money we're going to need for to run a full season. You know, it helps to know how many miles we're going to have to drive, or how many nights in hotels and these little things. So yeah, I like I said, I totally thought we were going to be in Charlotte for the season finale. It just, I don't know, last time there was a season finale in Charlotte, it didn't end up well for me though. I ended up with my leg facing the wrong way and a couple nights in the hospital, but that's why we're retired now. So we can sit back and think about the good old days and watch these young kids battle it out.
Yeah, Charlotte's been, it hasn't been the nicest. It's weird.
Actually, it's a double-edged sword for me, because I won my first race there in 16, and then it also started... Well, I guess it didn't start my injury, little side quest that I went on for a long time, but it was definitely the most violent injury as far as pain-wise that I've ever dealt with.
It was definitely a gruesome one. And yeah, like you said, a very double-edged sword. For me, the most iconic and memorable night I've ever had at a motorcycle race came at that facility in 2001 when Will Davis won in front of everybody. And that's just one of those moments that I'll cherish forever. And then at the same time, we've had some really tragic things happen at that facility as well. So it's unfortunate, sort of the cloud that's been looming over that, because I truly think that can be one of, if not the best, at least clay half miles that you guys race on in the country, when it's good. But yeah, I remember that. I was there that night you got your first win. You, Dalton, and Wellesley just duking it out. That was the race of the night.
That track was prepped so good that night. How can we reverse engineer what we did that night to have that at every half mile, and then we've got the greatest sport on dirt?
Well, that night, I think that track does so much better when it's a standalone thing during the summer. You know, they tried to push it to the season finale in October, and North Carolina weather in October, as you've gotten to experience, is wet. A lot of issues with, you know, storms and hurricanes and stuff that come through here, and it's just been and literally the perfect storm of nonsense the past couple years that we've had it, because, you know, they tried to do the doubleheader in 2020. We got that really epic first race and then got washed out the second day. And then you had your injury the same night as Mikey got hurt so bad and Sammy went flying to space. Like, just, you know, we've had those nights like that there. I wish that we would run at Charlotte on the schedule. I wish they could put it in either the spring after Sonoy or sometime during the summer before the series heads back out toward Illinois and Bike Week. Like, when you come over here for like the PA races, if they could dip down and then head back out west, I think that'd be neat. I don't know. In a perfect, I made this Excel sheet where I had in a perfect world schedule, I'll have to send you, but I don't have to take any responsibility of booking anything.
I do like when we go to the racetracks that are in conjunction with the NASCAR tracks, like Texas Motor Speedway and Charlotte, because they are such nice facilities typically. And I like being in the bigger demographic cities because it does allow the opportunity to have more fans there and a different demographic show up. And the tracks can usually be pretty good sometimes, but I don't know. It just depends. I've been to Charlotte and it's been really good at times. And then I've been to Charlotte where it's been not good. So.
But yeah, like you mentioned, we got a week off, and then Lake Ozark, that's going to be the finale in conjunction there with the Ozark Bike Rally. So we'll see how that pans out. Could be an interesting track. I expect if I were playing a guessing game, I think that's going to be I feel like it's going to be one of these tracks that grooves up and it's going to have a really fast abrasive groove. I could be completely wrong on that, but it is a track that does tend to take a little bit of rubber for car racing later in the night, but it's put on pretty epic show for sprint cars earlier this year with that high limit series. So it'll be interesting to see what the bikes do out there. I've never seen motorcycles go around that track, so it'll be a fun watch.
Yeah, it'll be cool to watch. I need to go ahead and probably watch a YouTube video of some cars racing around there just to get a general idea of the shape and the color of the dirt and that stuff. But it'd be great to get on a guest or two that you guys submit. We want to, you know, bring the people that you guys want to hear from, the stories that you want to know. And even if you guys want to send us some questions that you'd like to hear from us, we'd love to help. Scotty, we're finishing up a Dash for Cash right now. Fourth lap's coming to an end, and it's been so fun, and we appreciate all the feedback that we've gotten from the fans. I really like hearing that, and I know Scotty does as well. And just it's been a little fun side project for us. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Sideways Podcast with Scotty Taylor and Colby Carlisle.